That's the Cardinal skipper, Mike Matheny. You heard from Danny Mack. You heard from Pirates Radio because it was a mob scene. It was pandemonium, boys.
I didn't see any pandemonium.
It was.
Did you see it?
I saw a little. Where little pandemonium?
BT, did you see pandemonium?
No, I saw sadness.
That's what I saw.
Oh, that's from the Cardinals, though. That's not from the Buccos.
Yeah.
For the Buccos, it's pretty clear. When they win games, it's more than just a win. Mike Matheny talked about playing good baseball. Well, for the Buccos, when they win, it is totally. See, that's what happens when the Buccos win games, and especially when it happens against the Cardinals. By the way, it's 3:04. Your time check brought to you by Clarkson Jewelers, an officially licensed Rolex jeweler. I would go a step further than saying that all the other stuff is irrelevant. I would say that beyond playing good baseball, you've got to win. If you play a bad baseball game, you've got to win.
Doesn't
if
matter.
You are the Cardinals.
Yeah, it doesn't matter, and nobody's going to feel bad for you. Sometimes you are just going to get beat, and it was apparent early on in Saturday's game when Lance Lynn gave up 8 in the first inning.
Ouch.
That was probably going to be the day, right? Mm-hmm. That was probably the day you were going to get beat, and the Pirates don't care. They don't feel bad for you the next day that you're running out there a spot starter in John Gant. You have to figure out a way to get it done. And as Mike said, I think Gant did a fine job. It was fine. 3 innings, gave up a run. And really, maybe could have got out of there without giving up a run. It was a very interesting cutoff on a sack fly to left field that Tommy Pham looked like he had somebody leveled at the plate. Whatever. It gets
interesting is a nice way.
It was
that.
Very interesting, was it not?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get a chance to hear what the thought process was, but I think it was wrong. I think we all know that one. But you have to figure out a way to piece it together. You have to figure out a way to get that big hit. That one solo shot by Matt Carpenter can't be the only thing that you do offensively. Jameson Taillon was good. He was not great. He gave you opportunities. You had a chance to get to that bullpen and you couldn't do it. Are the Cardinals dead in the water? No, absolutely not. They still have a chance. But now you have to do it against good teams. Mm-hmm. You have to do it against the Cubs. And maybe the Cubs get it over with early, right? They win a game or two and the Brewers lose and they get the clinch and you maybe getting them hung over for the last day. That would be nice, I guess. But you have to beat the Brewers also after that. You have to beat good teams right now. What a challenge this is going to be.
Yeah, I guess you're pretty sure, at least I am anyway, that this Cardinals team, I don't know. I
isn't going to win the division?
This. Well, they're not going to win the division, and they're probably not going to sweep this series either. So I guess if you can get that clinching, well, I'm not playing. Maybe if you can clinch that division early, or the Cubs can clinch that early, maybe they rest a couple of guys in the following games. You know, that'd be great, right? That would help, I think, a lot. It's probably wishful to hope they do something like that, but I guess we'll see how they play things out. But, yeah, we are so far beyond trusting the process. And, you know, don't worry about the results. Just do the process right because you know the results are going to come. Right now, you're right, Randy. They have to win games, even if they look bad doing it. No win right now is a bad win. It's not going to be one of those things where, well, you know what? They won today, but they did all this other little stuff they have to clean up by the end of the year. Nah, this is the end of the year right now. And you mentioned Lance Lynn, and I think what's been disappointing here, well, one of the things in the last couple of weeks is, despite the fact they have won a decent amount of games, you have had starts from two different guys now in what were huge games at the time. And not only did they not win those starts, but they did very poorly. And Lance Lynn, you expect much better out of him in a start like that this weekend. Carlos Martinez in the start at Wrigley Field against the Cubs when the division was still in play. He looked terrible that day. Those are the kind of starts you can't have from your two best starters. And unfortunately for them, that's what's happened to them lately.
Yeah, you know that start's going to come, right? You know it's going to happen. At some point,
bad
you're going to have the,
mm-hmm.
the blow up. Yes, it just, unfortunately, it did, but it can't happen at a time like that when you need it the most.
And the bullpen has struggled. It has been a rugged year for Sadaharu Oh. Nobody expected that.
Randy?
Different guy.
Yep.
It said different guy.
Nope, Soonwan.
Oh. No, it's different.
Oh, Soonwan. Okay.
Different guy.
Him. And Brett Cecil, it has been an unexpectedly rugged year for him. And Mike Matheny admits, wait, we got to get more. Fellas, as you know, I'm an idea guy.
They just keep coming,
I
Randy.
can't stop them.
Yeah, I know.
Are you?
How about Sam Tuivalala?
Well, I don't think he's able to be used.
He must be unavailable.
He did throw a couple innings a couple days beforehand.
He did.
I like the high-end option there. with Tui. Tui, to me, he's got a big arm. We all know that. He's also got experience closing out games, albeit not at the big league level. I like him, too. Oh, the problem all year long, and we could talk about his stuff all day, and his stuff has been different. You'll see a good, right now, like you'll see a good slider out of him. Like, oh, that's the old O. And then you say, uh-oh, there he is again, right? In the inning yesterday, when he comes in the fifth, I think it was, Bostic, 0-2. It's like, oh, good, he's going to bury him. 0-2 single. I know. And then you get the next guy. Who was the home run? Why am I forgetting off the top of my head?
Because you'd never heard of him before.
Oh, no. It was Marte. Okay. It was the other guy. The next inning off of Cecil, first pitch that you didn't hear of very often. But he gets ahead of Marte, 0-1. And then you serve one up down the middle. Last year, he executed. He executed at a crazy high level. And Mike is absolutely right. It's hard to duplicate what he did because he had a special year. But his stuff is just different. His mistakes are getting hit, and he's just making more and more of them. And Mike's right. You had to have a lot of guys step up in a game like that when you're going to use your entire pen. And ultimately, you need to score more runs than you did with that one shot. But O has been disappointing this year.
What Matheny said about O and what he did for the Cardinals last season in comparison to this one, this is exactly why I don't like the idea. If this is what they truly believe, when Mike Gersh was on this station and said that he felt like the only thing they really needed for next season going in, or their main glaring concern, was the bullpen, this is why I don't really buy into that. Because I think you can piece together a bullpen, and they could probably do it with younger players, because the fickle nature of a reliever as it is. Oh, was great last year. This year, terrible. Maybe next year he's good again.
It happens with relievers.
It happens all the time with relievers. Unless you're talking about a premier closer or a premier setup man, and there aren't a whole lot of those in the game of baseball, you can put together a bullpen. So I don't think they're in a position right now to make that their main priority in the offseason. They probably already have a really good start for what the pen's going to be next year.
And look at the inconsistency of the offense. Some days we love the offense and say, man, this deep lineup, I really like that. And then you have weekends like this one, where yesterday you couldn't get to a pretty compromised bullpen in Pittsburgh. And you need those couple of hitters. And I know this is a stupid statement, but I'm going to make it anyway. People always complained about, well, you know, the Cardinals don't hit good pitching. Nobody hits good pitching.
It's good pitching.
Yeah, exactly. But you have to be able to beat that mediocre to bad pitching. And when you can't get to those guys, you need to have those people that are capable of hitting any
mistake.
That's
when it's glaring. That is when it's glaring.
Yep.
Everything is great. And Mo talked about this. He knew exactly what his team was going to be at the beginning of the season. He knew that it was going to be a team that was going to have to kill you 1-8. And it was going to have to be slow cuts, right, instead of that one guy in the middle. But
being bitten to death by ducks?
Yes, something like that.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. But it's very glaring when things aren't happening. There isn't one guy that you look to. And maybe that guy, like, at times, I thought that Tommy Pham coming up with the bases loaded, I thought he was going to hit a grand slam. Just because Tommy Pham has been so great. And he struggled a little bit yesterday. But that's still not the guy that you want to be leaning on. Like, and not say he can't do it, not say he hasn't been outstanding, but he's not the guy.
No, he's not
supposed to. And they don't have the guy. He is the guy this year, but they don't have the guy.
Yeah, he certainly wasn't supposed to be the guy.
Capital H, capital E.
Yeah. Correct. Do you remember the old Minnesota Twins team from like the mid-2000s, the mid-aughts?
Yes.
You know, Jason Bartlett, Jason Tiner. They have these, they were called, their nickname was the Piranhas. You know, the Piranhas, because they would just kind of nibble at you, and they would always come back. And then before you knew it, they won 95 games in a season. And you think, how does this lineup do it? Even that team had the thing that we're talking about the Cardinals lacking. They had Joe Mauer in the middle of it. They had Justin Morneau in the middle of it. Those were MVPs in the middle of their lineup. And I don't know if it was UBT or Randy, one of you guys last week.
Was it a good point?
It was a great point. I couldn't believe it. My mouth was agape with wonder. I couldn't believe what a great point you made, in that people talk about what the Cardinals have. And in their lineup, there are a lot of really good supplemental players. But what's missing is the middle of the order. In comparison to the Cubs, and I think that's where BT, I think it was you, that said the Cubs have a bunch of those guys too, but they also have Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo right in the middle. You know, the Cardinals have plenty of Ben Zobrists. They have plenty of those in their lineup. And that works out great if you have Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo. The Cardinals have to have at least one of those guys and maybe two.
All the sides in the world are great, but it's not a meal unless you have that steak.
That's right. Well put.
Tonight, the Cardinals will send Luke Weaver to the mound against John Lester. Redbirds with what the experts are saying is an 11% chance of making the playoffs.
That's correct.
It was 5 a couple weeks ago, guys. We're trending.
I would say
although it was 21 yesterday,
down 10% from yesterday. The Brewers at 14%. The Rockies are at 76%. They're up 25% after yesterday. And the D-backs have clinched home field in the wild card game.
I think the Rockies are going to disappoint. I think the Rockies are going to lay an egg. They haven't played these games.
So the Brewers are going to the playoffs?
They're going to disappoint. I haven't believed in the Brewers yet. And I'm sure as hell right. not going to start the last week saying the Brewers are a contender. So that leaves one team. That leaves one team. Yeah. Those Cardinals. You go
well,
get
Well, let's
them.
See. The Cubs' magic number now is 2, correct?
Correct. Yes.
So it is 2. I don't know exactly how I feel here because I kind of want that to get over with. Let them clinch this thing maybe tomorrow. But that also means the Cardinals have to probably, the Brewers and Cardinals both have to lose tonight.
Brewers don't play tonight.
Oh, the Brewers are off tonight.
Yeah.
That's true.
I think the best case scenario would just be win every game.
I'm almost thinking.
Not a bad call.
Just maybe lose tonight and then.
You said it, Randy. Just win, baby.
I don't know.
Just
win them all.
Well, that way, I mean, that's ideal.
Win the whole blanket.
Can you guarantee
thing.
That'll happen, Randy?
I wish I could guarantee that, but I cannot.
Guarantee to me a series sweep.
Wouldn't that be fun? To tick off Ben Zobrist, if for no other reason.
So the Cardinals are 4-11 against the Cubs this year, right?
4-11. That's like a Ram-esque number that you're throwing out to me.
Yeah. Well, maybe not this year.
Yeah, maybe not.
Rams are going to be like a 9-win team. Have you been watching?
I've been seeing their division, yeah. It's not great. Speaking of the NFL, there are only 2 undefeated teams left in the league after week 3 and pending tonight. We're going to talk about Sunday's action. That would be yesterday. It's next in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Well, that was disheartening if you were a Lions fan. 8 teams finished week 2 unbeaten. Now there are 2 unbeaten teams left in the NFL. 6 unbeaten teams lost over the course of the weekend, and the Falcons and Chiefs are the only teams in the league, and that even includes tonight's game, Dallas and Arizona. Falcons and Chiefs are the only 2 unbeaten teams in the National Football League on a crazy day, especially if you happen to have money on games.
Dude, that's very true, Randy. The early slate, that's the best football I think we've seen in a long time. Mm-hmm. Like, there were so many competitive games, so many upsets, so many near upsets. Who expected Deshaun Watson to go toe-to-toe with Tom Brady? Well, he did it.
Yep.
Now Tom did what Tom does and comes back and has an epic drive and gets it done. Finally finds Brandon Cooks, who I know fantasy owners have been wondering where the hell is he at. Well, he found him. But I think that showed a lot, like Deshaun Watson doing his thing.
And I don't want to pretend to know what is going on in Tom Brady's mind, but when you saw the 2 guys talking after the game, you could tell, at least it appeared to me, Brady was basically saying, hey, man, you're going to be really good. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, or at least that's the tone that I kind of picked up from watching on TV. Maybe I'm wrong, but it sure seems like if that guy is recognizing what Deshaun Watson does and is capable of doing, and if you're projecting what he might be for his career, I think he sees it.
Yeah, pretty safe to say that the Patriots are the champions of the AFC East after 3 weeks. How about the Bears bearing down?
Yes.
Taking out the Steelers in OT.
Bear down, baby.
Bear down.
And you know what? They
Chicago
somehow,
Bears.
I don't know if you guys pay a lot of attention to Bears football, but they somehow manage to even make wins. They do stupid stuff. Did you see Marcus Cooper?
I saw Marcus Cooper.
What is he doing?
That might have been one of the more unbelievable things I've ever seen.
That was,
you block a field goal. You
Leon
have
Lett,
momentum.
Right?
You have got it. And then you ain't got it anymore. that was special.
The best explanation I think I've ever heard was, well, you know, I thought I was in the end zone. You know, see, there are these lines on the field, and they indicate whether or not you are in the end zone. And in most places, the end zone is a totally different color.
Those aren't just on TV, right? Those lines?
Yeah, no, like, they're on the field. They're actually on the – it's not like the first down marker on TV, the yellow line. That's not something they can see. We can see it. But also, they can totally see the paint in the end zone. Yeah.
Meanwhile, last night the Las Vegas Raiders fell to the Redskins. HTTR. #HTTR.
Randy, that was the Oakland Raiders. The Vegas Raiders will be much more balanced. And yeah, they look bad. What did Carr have? Something like 36 yards or something like that in the first half.
28
yards. It was not an ideal game for them. But credit the Redskins. That offense, I do like that. I'm all right with it. No, their offense is coming alive, and you knew it was going to be good week one. You just kind of weren't certain about it. You didn't know what was going on with them, but they certainly figured it out against the Raiders, who are a very good team and didn't make them look like it.
You know, there's been a lot of things that have happened in this first 3 weeks, and I don't recall a season like this, at least in a while, where so many things are kind of up in the air, right? Were the things that you thought going into the season by week three, you really have no idea.
No idea.
So what are the Raiders now? Are they not a good team? I mean, does a good team allow that to happen last night?
I don't know. Hey, maybe the travel's finally catching up.
Along those lines, what the hell are the Jaguars and what the hell are the Ravens?
Yes. I was going to ask, what the hell are the Vikings?
Oh, Case Keenum?
What?
What are the Buffalo Bills?
I don't know, man.
Case Keenum just owns the Buccaneers, though.
I guess. 369 and three touchdowns.
Unreal.
I didn't see that coming. Like that Vikings team, maybe
coached up a little bit.
I guess they are. Sam Bradford, I was so impressed week one. Apparently, anybody could do it over there.
Yeah.
She's right.
Yeah.
I've been giving her crap for a long time.
Yeah.
Wait, I apologize.
That?
It was Shelly Smith. Yeah. Said he was fabulous.
She also mentioned in that report from Rams training camp that Alden Smith was having a lot of fun out there on the field.
Yeah, he was having a good time, wasn't he?
But he wasn't on the team.
Yeah, bright personality.
At least we got that one to hang our hat on.
The Colts win a game. Didn't think they would, but they got to play the Browns. And the Browns are 0-3.
Browns were road favorites for the first time in like years, I think, maybe even a decade, and it didn't work out for them. Jacoby Brissett, half that he had, he was really
good. So how is Tolzien starting then?
What do you mean?
Well, Brissett had only been there for like 7 days when they started the season. Yeah, they traded.
I guess you're right.
He's just a good athlete. Dorsett
for him. No, I guess.
One other one. Okay.
Tolzien knew the offense.
I didn't realize this, that Aaron Rodgers was 0-7 in overtime games before he came back to beat the Bengals.
That doesn't sound right.
Probably because he never gets to those situations.
Yeah.
He just seemed to shut him down. But that was a big one for him and for them. Just so many tight games yesterday. And I know a lot of the narrative, and I'm sure we'll get into it later, the narrative coming into the day was the anthem, the protest by the players. Dude, the slate was awesome.
The actual football that they showed on TV was really good.
It was really good.
It was about time, right?
Yeah.
You know, we spend a lot of time, I think, over the last few years complaining about the quality of play. Don't you think?
Yeah, but the competitive level is good. Even though the quality isn't great, nobody plays the crisp games. The only team that really plays crisp football is New England. And everybody else competitively is pretty equal.
But then that's what I'm saying is I think that the games yesterday were competitive, but they were also pretty good quality.
Yeah.
And you're not getting a lot of that every week.
I think part of it, and the Detroit game was one outlier, you aren't seeing a lot of officials, which is a good thing.
Well, yes, except for that particular one.
I think that was a touchdown.
And the Von Miller penalty.
Yeah. There's some stupid stuff that still happens. Yeah, you're right. But
that, I mean, that's absurd. So, everybody was laughing about it on the field, and they penalized them.
Yeah. Crazy. More coming up on the NFL later in the show, but another Major League Baseball fan was hit with a foul ball yesterday in Chicago, and we're going to talk about that and what the Cardinals are doing to prevent this from happening with the Redbirds president, Bill DeWitt III. He's next on 101 ESPN. That is Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred after a couple of incidents in the last week in which fans have been hit by foul balls. And here to talk about that and more is the president of your St. Louis Cardinals, Bill DeWitt III, who joins us on the Lufia's Kia Celebrity Line. Bill, always good to have you with us. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good. How about you guys?
Everything's great. Well, you heard those words from Rob Manfred, and I know that the Cardinals have always been extremely cognizant of fan security and fan safety, and I think anybody who's been to the ballpark recently knows that in the last couple of years, the nets have been extended. Where do the Cardinals stand right now in regards to doing more or not?
Well, as you know, we extended our netting down all the way down past the dugouts or to the end of the dugouts this season and this last off season. So we've been there this whole year, and you know, it's worked out great. I think we were nervous in the past by what fans might think. And then for me, one of the key things that drove our decision was the netting technology changed in, I think it was maybe a year prior, or it was kind of, you know, in that time frame, in which we experimented with it in Jupiter further down, and then in Springfield. And it appeared to that it was, you know, just marginally better, but that's all it took for fans to basically be comfortable with the sight lines. And so we did it at Busch Stadium, and the reaction's been great.
Bill, I know a lot of people will say, well, just pay attention. You'll be fine. And you should pay attention at a baseball game. Wherever you're sitting, it could be dangerous. But balls are flying off the bat at an incredible rate, 100-plus miles an hour. Even if you're paying attention, you could be in trouble. So it's not just as easy as, hey, pay attention, watch the game, right? I mean, that extra netting potentially is saving lives.
Yeah, I do think that the just saying pay attention is right. It's a good message and it's important, but there are conditions where if you're really close right behind the dugout, you just don't have a lot of time. And you know, with what we're providing with people and their cell phones in terms of additional information and technology, you know, I think that factors in as well. You know, there's kind of reason sometimes to be looking down and not at the ballpark. We all hope that, you know, we have a 3-hour hiatus from these damn cell phones. at least that's what I tell my kids. But, you know, the reality is you know, they're bringing them in the game too. So it's time. I feel like, you know, we're big advocates for what we've done and for all the clubs to do it.
Bill, when I was in college, I was an usher on that first base dugout side, and it was the Anheuser-Busch ownership. So basically, for those right-handed hitters, my goal was to make sure that no Anheuser-Busch family members got killed by a foul ball. And man, I'll tell you, Mike Schmidt almost took my head off one day. It's unbelievable how hard those balls are hit until you're down there, and you sit right down there. You know how hard it is. It's unbelievable how hard those foul balls go.
Yeah, and I mean, look, we saw what happened to Juan Encarnacion. I mean, he was standing in the batter's box, but you just don't have a lot of time. And it's one of those things where even if you're tasked with protecting somebody, your, you know, instinct takes over. And, you know, it's like a mom who thinks she can just hold her baby without a car seat. Well, that just sometimes doesn't do it, even though everybody has good intentions. So I think it's time for MLB to just, I don't know if it's mandate, because I do have sympathy for teams with really quirky architectural details transitioning from behind home plate and through to the dugout. In some cases, just as an example, you know, a team may not have a guide wire spot to put the wire in out in right field or left field to receive the wire that the net hangs from. So what do? You know, you might have to build some sort of structure, a pole, and then that blocks people's view. So it's not necessarily a slam dunk easy solution in every case. But, you know, I think you'll see more and more clubs get to that point one way or the other.
What is next? Because a lot of teams, and this goes for all sports, nothing really changes. It happened in the NHL. A young girl had to die before they put the nets up behind both goals. Usually things don't happen until something terrible happens. But are there other safety measures that might be in the works that you think are coming next that might happen before something else happens to a fan?
Are you referring to foul balls and bats flying out? Or
anything in particular that a ballpark might be able to do?
Well, as it relates to just projectiles from the field, I think netting's the only solution. You know, some teams have plexiglass, like in the front row. We looked at that early on, and it only protects maybe one or two rows. So it's got glare issues for people. So it's not really a great solution. But you know, the security question, you know, you can take it to a broader point. What teams are going through to beef up security, given the state of the world we live in right now, is pretty incredible. I think most of the teams are applying for DHS certification, which is a extremely rigorous protocol that teams have to go through. We're in the final stages of it. We've submitted an application to DHS. We hope to be certified this offseason. And it's a, you know, I mean, this thing was 3 inches thick when we submitted it. It's procedures, it's protocols, it's shoring up perimeter, it's all these things that you do to make sure that, that the building's safe for visitors.
The Cardinal President, Bill DeWitt III, with us in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Let's touch on a couple of more things. You're involved in an awful lot, and your website tweeted when Amazon announced that they were looking for a second headquarters. Your website or your Twitter page invited them. How involved will the Cardinals be in trying to pursue an Amazon to St. Louis?
Well, so far we've been very involved in the effort that's really a quick time frame for cities to submit. I was on a call earlier today in which, you know, kind of all the regional leaders, or at least their representatives, along with developers and other marketing folks, are pulling together a submission, a bid. And it's pretty exciting. I mean, I think even if we don't get Amazon, I think this effort will have been worth it because it really forces you to look at what you have as a region and as an overall municipal area, and as opposed to just thinking in terms of downtown or the county or the east side or whatever. And, you know, we've got some incredible assets that, you know, other cities don't necessarily have. You know, the airport has capacity. You know, we have we don't have the traffic problems that some other regions have. We've got a vacancy in the downtown that could easily and quickly get ramped up. And then we've got parcels that can be built, and Ballpark Village will certainly be a part of the submission in terms of being able to have phase 3, 4, 5, or, you know, just one big phase 3 available. But that's just a, you know, drop in the bucket. I mean, they what they say they're bringing to a community is really a pretty mind-boggling amount of new people and jobs and infrastructure. So it would be great if we got them, but like I said, even the effort itself I think is worth it.
Well, the economic impact would be tremendous, and I know we're all looking forward to the next phases of Ballpark Village. That's going to be great. Bill, you mentioned the community, and as everybody knows, the community is, there's a civil unrest, and it's going on all over the place, and you can understand it, and there are protests left and right. When you look at this from an organizational standpoint, do the Cardinals have a role in something when it comes to this, or is it just to maybe maintain a status quo and have something that people can continue to look forward to and use as maybe even a distraction?
I think we play an important role. The first and primary role is that continuity and making sure that these events go on for people to continue, you know, business as usual. It's entertainment, but it's also, you know, we had the concert the other night, Thursday night, and the mayor called and said, look, I really think it's time to get back to business. We'll, you know, whatever resources you need to keep everybody safe, you know, we're in a position to provide. And so let's do this. And I, you know, couldn't have agreed with her more. And so I think just being who we are and trying to generate more events and more business. And, you know, these concerts, for example, aren't necessarily big money makers for the team, but they're great for the city. They bring people down. They create tax revenue on the ticket side, in other sources. So we'll keep pushing for that kind of thing. As far as on a social level, we really try to be stick to our knitting, and you know, we all have our opinions, but I don't think it's necessarily the Cardinals' role to pick sides on divisive issues. Once in a blue moon, we feel so passionate, maybe as an ownership group, that we will, but it's pretty rare that we would, you know, be itching to join the fray of a binomial argument.
And Bill, a shout out to Vicki Bryant and her staff and your entire staff. The concert was sensational, and it did go off without a hitch. And you guys have, like you say, you don't make an awful lot on those, but you do them really, really well.
Well, thanks, Randy. It's I really love them. I'm a huge music fan, and I just think it's so fun to experience Busch Stadium in a different setting, in a different environment. And You know, and I think these kinds of things bring people and introduce them to the stadium who might not otherwise come down if they're just not having to be a Cardinal fan or whatever, a baseball fan. So, you know, we'll keep pushing. And actually, we've got a nice advance notice of a number of shows for next year that, you know, if we can do two or three or four, you know, that would be great.
Moving on to the actual baseball on the field, of course, the season is not over yet, but we are getting close to the end of it. But as we look ahead to the offseason, what do you suppose the Cardinals' offseason will look like?
You know, it's a good question. Of course, it depends on a little bit how we finish here. But to some extent, you know, if you look at the season, it's statistically almost over, and we have a good feel for what our young guys are capable of doing. You know, it's one of those things where if you look at every position, you can kind of make an argument that we have somebody with upside available at that position. And so, or somebody that's a fixture, you know, like a Yadi at catcher or Dexter in the outfield or whatever. But if you, like I said, you can make an argument at any position that we've got somebody young who can do the job. Now, you know, the reality is, will they all, you know, max out and overachieve? No, but this year it showed us the importance of depth and how important it is to our model. I think what we'll see in this offseason is, in order to do a big deal, there really has to be a player that you can probably move some people to get, and that our assets, our logjam of talent, will need to be used to get that person, and that person would also have to be incrementally better than the potential of some of these young guys that we have.
Bill DeWitt III, always good to have you with us. Thanks so much for your time, Bill, and we will talk to you soon.
Okay, guys, anytime.
See you later. That is the Cardinal president, Bill DeWitt III, joining us here in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. So I think it's cool that, and I think it's smart and necessary that they are involved in the pursuit of a company like Amazon.
I think it would be great if that happens. Does that mean that I can get same-day stuff?
Yes.
Because I'm already very intrigued by Prime, and I have something showing up at my door every day. Mm-hmm. But if it could be same-day, that would be, that'd be great.
Toledo.
Isn't there already a distribution center?
Edwardsville.
Yeah. It's right between GC and Edwardsville.
So that's why we get it so fast.
I like that.
Coming up next in the Fast Lane, the Mizzou football team is kind of scuffling, but their head coach believes that he is the man to get it going. We'll talk about it next with our Hot Topics of the Day on 101 ESPN. So our state schools football team, the Missouri Tigers, have played three games against Power 5 conference teams this year, losing by scores of 31-13, 35-3, and 51-14 Saturday night against Auburn at Faurot Field. They will not lose next weekend.
Are they off?
That to the bank.
They're off.
They're off. Mm. Their coach, Barry Odoman, if you wanted to check out after Saturday night's thrashing by Auburn, that's understandable. But here's what Barry Odom had to say in his post-game press conference.
Now I'm going to talk real quick about the state of the program, and here's the narrative. All right. So pen's ready, microphone's on. Let's talk real life and where we're at. All right. I want to get one thing real straight. I'm going to win here. That's going to happen. We will win. Okay, this is a turnaround. Any way you slice it or dice it or want to look at it, this is a turnaround process. And unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, I'm built for this because I've been in a whole heck of a lot of it my entire life. I want to go back to the year 1997 and 98 when Larry Smith was here. All right, his ass went and fought for 14 years and finally broke down the wall. Okay, he did it. All right. And there's a lot of people that went and sacrificed and did a lot of things to get that turned around. But I was part of it. I was in the locker room. I saw it. I was a captain. I know what it takes. Okay, fast forward, 2004. Everybody wanted to run Gary Pinkel out of town. Okay, that's pretty damn foolish. All right? Because he's done become the winningest coach in program history. That was a turnaround. It took time. Okay, that's where we're at. Okay, it's a turnaround. And I don't like it. I want to win right now. But that's not the hand I'm given. We're doing a lot of really good things in this program. Our kids are working extremely hard. We're not winning games yet, but we will. I'm the man to go get it done with this staff, with this team, with this program. There's not anybody left standing after 2015. All right, I am. And I know what it takes. You talk about dark days. I heard that over here walking across the street. I've seen a damn dark day. July 12th, 2005. Okay, Aaron O'Neill, that's a dark day. All right, this ain't dark days. This is when the going get tough, you build in together, you fight together, and you go find a way to get it done. And that's where we're at. It's part of a turnaround process that is not going to be easy. Our team knows that. I know that. Our program knows that. Okay, but I got a guy that's the third team left tackle from Rockbridge High School that's got a Twitter account. It's got 12 followers, and he wants to put out how terrible we are. All right? That's the way this society is, that we go and we read and we think, oh, my gosh, Missouri football is we're this and we're that. We hadn't won yet. All right, but I got a group of guys that went over to the hospital yesterday that took care of a kid. Okay, I'm building the future for this football team and this program and our kids' lives, that they're going to go be successful in the next 40 years of their life. They're going to have adversity in their life, and they're going to go back to this point on how they respond. So I'm good. I've got a platform to be able to go build it. I know what I've got in the locker room. We're going to win. That's going to happen. Want to fast forward a little bit longer, 2012, went to Memphis. Okay, maybe the historically at that point was the worst program in the country. All right, 2012, we won four games. All right, 2013, we were a hell of a lot better, but we won three games. So everybody think, oh, they went backwards. No, we didn't go backwards. We were better in a lot of spots. And then 2014, we were lined up and we won 10 games. Won our bowl game, won a conference championship. And at the end of the year, and when anybody in the damn country wanted to play our ass, I guarantee it, because we were playing the way you're supposed to go play. It was a turnaround. Justin Fuente did it. I was part of it. Okay? So, and then fast forward to 2015, okay? That was a tough year, all right? That built me for who I am today. That built our program. We're going to get there, all right? That's the narrative. That's the turnaround. That's the state of our program. I'm disappointed. I'm frustrated. All the above. But I'm in right where I want to be, building this team with a whole bunch of guys that want to go do it the right way in every aspect of our organization.
And after a 51-14 loss.
Well, I'll tell you, first of all, I really like Barry Odom. I'll say this also. I liked Kim Anderson. I thought he was a very good dude, too. A lot of the things that Coach is talking about here, that's real life stuff. I love the fact that he's got guys that are going to the hospital and visiting kids.
Don't play that card.
Any team can go do that, too. Your job is to win. And this is a team a couple of years ago, it was just 3 years ago, that they won 11 games. They were trending in the right direction. He said he's the only one left standing from 2015. That was because he got the gig and fired everybody else. Mm-hmm. Like, got rid of all the continuity that they had there, everything that they had built, and now there's an expectation. There was something that was built up to, and, Gary Pinkel did have his last year was not a great year. But there's still some pieces around. You look at that team, you look at the offense, you look at the struggles on defense, well, what did you do to it? You lost some players, sure, but you also deconstructed what had been working for a team. I just feel like I love the passion that he has here. I hope he has an opportunity to pay off on some of the things that he says, but I don't know if he's going to be given that much.
My recommendation would be, if you have a huge turnaround job like he says it is, don't be following and reading the Twitter feeds of a third string left tackle from Columbia Rockbridge.
Yeah. Oh, well, the kid's passionate too, Randy.
That's true.
Yeah.
I'd probably just
stay mad at his parents.
Twitter altogether.
Not a bad call.
I mean, if you've got a job to do here and you don't want to get distracted by that kind of stuff, then don't do it. Also, I'm with you on the hospital thing. Don't bring up hospitals. All the work we do with hospitals, you might as well bring your baby to your press conference and have him on your lap.
That's exactly right.
Here's my human shield.
I think that there is a very fine line. These are two different things, but there's a fine line between passion and desperation. I just wonder where you're at here.
I think we're talking desperation. Cards and Cubs tonight. It's Luke Weaver against John Lester. The Cubs can clinch at least a tie for the National League Central Championship with a victory tonight. Their magic number is dos, correct?
Two.
Yeah, so
make it hard on him.
Yeah.
Weaver has been throwing the ball really, really well. On the flip side, Lester, not so much.
You know, Lester,
he's had a horrible September.
He picked the Cardinal off.
I know.
Which is almost impossible.
Yeah.
That might be the highlight of his season.
That might be. And Aaron Judge today with his 49th home run. He ties Mark McGwire's all-time Major League rookie record with number 49.
It didn't look like he was going to get there. Like the stall that he had and the struggles that he had. Mm-hmm. Good for him. Randy, you said it earlier in the office. If you lived in New York and had a chance to go out and see that kid, you would see him in a heartbeat. He is special. There is no question about that.
And I think that's about it.
Well, did you mention...
Robbie Fabry.
Yeah. Is that the sound of his knee?
Yeah. Oh,
we're talking too soon.
Come on, Brad. Too soon.
They're going to reevaluate him at the end of training camp.
That's not good.
A reoccurrence of the ACL injury that he suffered in the middle of last season. He was actually skating at playoff time, skated all summer, and now it's not working.
I am not a knee injury expert, but reaggravation of a problem that kept him out for most of last season, I don't see how this is like a couple of weeks thing. This has to be an extended. Yeah. Period of time he's going to miss.
So many issues, man. So many guys. Like, I think it's great to have the next man up narrative, and it's great for young guys to have opportunities. Not all at once. Not all right now.
No, and especially not him, because he was supposed to solidify some things for them. You know, moving forward this year, they did not have him for most of last year. They did not have him for the postseason either. And he was supposed to be kind of all right, now that we've got him, this will kind of change things for us a little bit.
That hurts. And Aaron Judge did hit number 50 today, too, by the way, 49 and 50. So he surpassed
McGuire. Good for him.
First rookie, obviously, ever to hit 50 home runs in Major League Baseball. The 4 o'clock fight is next on 101 ESPN.